Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Life Without Limits podcast. I'm your host, Yogi Roth. For those of you tuning in for the first time, welcome. Appreciate you joining this conversation. We've had a blast. The whole goal here is to explore the idea of what makes us human. And for those of you who are repeat offenders coming back, we appreciate the love, rating, reviewing, subscribing, telling your friends about it. Had some really fun conversations. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and it's hard to believe we're coming up on December, and it's championship weekend in college football. And all season long, we've tried to make sure that we tell stories on this podcast that can relate to college football. Well, today's story is no different, and I'm really stoked to share this one. It's Michael Talajan, and if you aren't familiar with the name, you're definitely familiar with his work. First and foremost, he's a friend, he's a boss, and he's a mentor as a storyteller. He's an acclaimed filmmaker. He's won Emmys. He's won Peabody Awards. All the good stuff in this business. And currently, he's the senior coordinating producer of original content at the Pac-12 Network. Basically means he runs Pac-12 films. So all the unique stories, all the features, all the behind-the-scenes content, he's in charge and responsible of creating a great team that he does and has at the Pac-12 Network, but also signing off on it. And what I love about Mike is, number one, he's got a really cool sense about him, a humility about him, because he's done some big things. I mean, this guy did a 30 for 30 film. He wrote it, he produced it, he directed it. It's called Once Brothers, and one of the more powerful films I've ever seen. It's about Drazen Petrovic and Vlade Divac and the fall of the Soviet Union. And while it's got basketball as a backdrop, it's really about friendship. And it's a really special film. He talks about it in our conversation. But when he dives in to his path and his story, I think we're all going to relate to it. Because I think we all have this moment of, do we go for our passion or not? And Michael hit that as well when he was younger. He was actually an econ major in college, and now he's a filmmaker. So those are clearly two distinctly different professions, but he sees life through a really unique lens. I can honestly say that anything I've ever seen him put his hands on, I've only worked with him for a couple years now, he's made everything better. He's made me a better human, let alone a better storyteller. I think if you're an aspiring storyteller, if you are a current storyteller, which I think we all are, right? Whether you're a banker in the finance industry, whether you're in sales, whether you're a teacher, whether you're a coach, whether you're a parent, right? We're telling stories all the time. Mike is going to make your day that much better. So I don't want to waste any more time. This is a really fun conversation. I've been looking forward to it all season long. And of course, you can check out Mike's latest work, which is The Drive, which we are both a part of, a really cool documentary series on the Pac-12 Network. It's been going for a couple years now. This year, he's directed every episode. It's followed every single team in the Pac-12. And it gives you an inside look at their football team. Our final episode will air this week on the University of Utah. You can check that out on Pac-12 Network. It'll be all over social media. It's going to be epic because it follows them not only during practice, off the field, but also in a heartbreaking loss to Oregon a couple weeks ago on the final play of the game. And the way that Mike crafts this is absolutely beautiful. So check out his work. Follow Mike. All of his links on social media, LinkedIn, etc. will be in the bio on the blog page. But overall, enjoy listening to, in my opinion, one of the greatest storytellers of our time right now, Michael Talajan, the Pac-12 Networks and Beyond. Oh, and here we are, the beautiful Adidas Touchdown Room, Pac-12 Networks headquarters, Michael Talajan, senior coordinator producer, which I don't really feel is always the appropriate title, because you do a little bit of everything, man. Yeah. But thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no sweat, Yoke. Very happy to sit down with you and talk. Obviously, we've been working together now for almost four years, with The Drive and other features and stuff you've been doing and helping out with. So maybe in some ways this is overdue, but glad to be here.
Cool. All right. So I always I only have one rule on this podcast. Okay. And it's, you can't ask questions you know the answers to. So it's been really fun to prep for this for you because, as you've referenced, we've known each other for a while. And the first question I always like to ask that I'm just kind of curious about your opinion and my perspective, because it's about the same moment, but I wonder your take on it. So the question I like to ask is, the first time that we met, what is your memory of that?
The first time we met, I believe you were you had been working here already. I came about 6 months into the first season, and you were giving like a little talk to the staff, the production staff, about some projects you were doing with NFL Films and Pete Carroll. And what was my impression? was your question?
Well, just kind of like your first memory. I always think everybody has unique memories.
Yeah, my first memory was just like, yeah, this guy's very, eager and energetic and positive about, what he's doing and telling stories and wanting to know more and wanting to collaborate. And so it was very much positive and it's all come to fruition. So my first impressions were definitely the right impression.
I like it. Well, mine was the opposite. I was like super nervous because you got to remember, all right, I'm just a young guy, get this job, I'm fired up and a little probably overeager at the time, wanting to do all these stories and hear that you get hired. Oh, who is this Michael Talagian guy, right? And you Google you, which is what happens.
Right.
And I see all these films that you've done, and I've watched all of them. We're going to get into them, from Once Brothers to 30 for 30, the Kentucky film on their basketball team. I'm like, oh, this is a heavy hitter. Like, I haven't done squat. Like, how am I going to present to this guy? And then I was hoping that you'd come to that meeting, right? And basically, for everybody listening, it was like a coffee chat, and everybody comes in. It's basically an opportunity for the other employees of the Pac-12 Network you don't work with every day to get to know you. So I was fired up that you were going to be there because I was like, okay, this guy's going to get to know me. And you came in late, and I remember watching you coming through the corner. I was like, damn, he missed all the good stuff. But I think that's funny because I think we always have a different story around similar moments. And this podcast is all about the art of storytelling and trying to find out what makes us human. And I think stories and going for it do. You're a guy who's told some iconic stories. We'll list them all on the blog and we'll get to a few of them. But what was the first memory you had around story that you were like, wow, this is kind of cool?
Well, I think from a work standpoint, I mean, I've always been a creative person. So I was always doing artwork and making short films. I remember in probably a freshman in high school, we had this little film production class, way back. I mean, this is in the late 80s when I was in high school.
It was East Coast, right?
East Coast. And my teacher was like, we're going to do a short film festival or film contest. And so I was like, wow, I never really even thought about filmmaking and stuff. So they let us use the old cameras, and I went out and we loved basketball. My buddies did too, and there was a hoop near us at the park. It was only about 8 feet high, and so I did this whole slam dunk contest because the NBA had the slam dunk contest and the NBA had just been kind of starting really, and so I did this slam dunk contest with all my friends, and we had judges and put it to music. And so I don't know if it was really a story, but it was my first, taste of that. And then editing it and then showing it to friends and seeing their reaction to it. And you could actually get a reaction, an emotional reaction from someone out of something that you just shot and put together. It was like, wow, this is interesting. And then obviously in college, I did a lot of writing, short stories, and just got more into storytelling and how much I enjoyed it and learned from it, and that it could affect people in many ways. And then I went to New York. I was a economics major, and my dad was a very practical guy, so he's like, you need to get a regular job. And so I went down to New York City and was interviewing, like working for banks and Wall Street and all this stuff. And then my heart really wasn't in it. So I had a friend that worked at the NBA, and I said, hey, you mind if I come in just to say hello and see if you guys might have any opportunities? And this was just happened. They had an open spot for not even a production assistant. It was like below. It was like a logger position where you just basically sit and watch games, and you log the highlights, and you describe Dominique Wilkins had a 360 dunk at this point or whatever. And I took a job there making, maybe $16,000 a year. That's kind of how it started. And once I was in that environment and I had access to editing and the equipment and a lot of expertise, there was a lot of guys above me that served as my mentors that taught me, some of the basics of production and of storytelling. And then I used to just stay late after my shift, and I would edit my own music videos and features using material that the other producers had shot. And one day I showed it to one of them, and they were like, wow, that's pretty good. And then before I knew it, they let me go out and do my first shoot for NBA Inside Stuff was the show.
All right. So if you reflected back on from your early parts of your career in high school, right, with the slam dunk video, which we need to see, find that somewhere.
Yeah, man, I don't know. It's somewhere, I bet you.
But if you look at that, and then you in college, right, and then you're writing, and you're diving in, you're into the storytelling world, what do you think affected you the most? Was it the reaction? Was it being up late at night and editing it? Was it the writing? Was it just the creative of saying, let's go do this? Because there's a lot of different emotions that you just described. Yeah.
I think it all, for me, it was the entire process. It was, I think it was, the initial thing is just that little spark of an idea, you know, that kind of gets you going, where you're like, you find yourself thinking about it all the time, even when you're not sitting down to thinking about it. You're in the shower and you're thinking about, I could do that, or that'd be a great piece of music to use there. Like, it's just that seed of an idea that kind of gets you excited. And then it's the hard part. It's actually doing it, getting the people you need to help you make it. And then you just know it's the right thing when you just become completely engulfed in it and you can't stop thinking about anything else. You don't get tired when you're working on it. You know, you're editing, and before you know it, it's 3 a.m. and you didn't even realize it. And you were just so focused on making the right edit or writing the right line of voiceover. And a big part for me is the collaborative process, like working with other very talented people, whether it's camera people or audio guys or sound mixers or writers or music composers. Just, I loved sharing ideas and kind of giving them a sense of what I was going for, and then having them come with an idea was even better, and putting it together and seeing, like, elevating it each, you know, that's that collaborative process. Because you can't, at least with filmmaking, you can't do it by yourself. It's not like writing a novel or something. So right. I love that part of it. And then I guess maybe, I don't know if it's my ego or what, but to show it and then have people clap or laugh or ask you lots of questions is thrilling too. So, because you want it to have an effect, you know, on people. So
when you look at your process of putting stories together, right, you said the first one, and I love this, you know, I've been reading articles about the how the brain works and a creative mind, and they said the first one is the struggle, right? So to me, that's like the process. What's the idea? I can't stop thinking about it. How am I going to shape it? For you, you've been able to streamline the process. We're going to get to a couple of your projects that you've done, and specifically the drive on the Pac-12 Network, the doc series you're directing. How do you get it from idea? We all have those ideas, right? In the shower, in the middle of the night, on notepads, to structure.
Yeah, structure is important. You know, I find nowadays a lot of young people, the technology for making stories has gotten a lot cheaper and better. So people, there's the coolest camera, and there's that glide cam, and there's that cool whatever. So, I see a lot of very well shot pieces, but to be honest, I see a lot of stuff that is not that interesting, right? Because it's just pretty pictures and music. It's not telling a story. The characters aren't compelling, or it's not put together in a way that hooks me in. The structure is critical. And that was probably the biggest thing I learned was that when I went to grad school, when I went to USC for film school after I had worked at the NBA for a while, they really pounded that idea of structure, three-act structure, which is basically a beginning, right, which is the status quo of, you know, who's these people and what is the problem that they face. Then there's act two, which is the struggle, right? Will that person, you know, what obstacles does that person have to go through to try to achieve their goal or get what they want? And then there's the third act, which is basically the resolution. Did they get what they were after or did they not? And you can really boil that down, and that could be a 90-minute scripted film. That could be a 3-minute feature. But the best features have that structure, that three-act or beginning, middle, end structure. People try to break that, but usually when you break it, it doesn't turn out to be the most satisfying piece of content. So the best people understand it and use it to their benefit, and then put their own twist on it, obviously.
Right. It's kind of like hero's journey. Like, you look at any story, there's an element of that.
It is. Aristotle. You know, I mean, that's where it all, you know, it's proven the test of time.
You've done a lot of cool projects, but I think it's timely to talk about your 30 for 30. And we've talked about this a lot. it's an interesting time on the planet right now.
Yeah.
You got to dive in. And for those of you that haven't seen Once Brothers, you go back and talk about the breakup of the Soviet Union, Croatia, Serbia, Drazen Petrovic, Vlade Divac. To go back and look at a time period that was war-torn, mm-hmm. that was conflicted, right. where there was different opinions, right? You could look at America right now. It's conflicted. At least there's different opinions. Thank God it's not war-torn.
Right.
But to go back for you years later and document that time, what was that like for you, and how did you process and shape a structure?
Yeah. Well, that was probably – I mean, that's a once – I don't know if it's a once-in-a-lifetime project, but it's definitely like once in a decade maybe, where you get a project that with a story that is so – I mean, it's a sad story, but it's a story that's so compelling and so gripping. And then you also have the characters – that are willing to work with you to tell it the way you want to tell it. It was remarkable. I mean, you can have great stories, but if you can't sit the people down face to face to talk about it, then it's hard to really get to the essence of it. And here we had Vlade Divac, who was unbelievable with us. And then we had Drazen Petrovic's family, who was the same. So I felt I had all the ingredients to, that if I could come up with the structure, I had the means to do it and do it right. So to go there, it was, to be honest, it wasn't something I knew a whole lot about. I mean, I knew the story of the two guys and the basketball part of it and their friendship and ultimately the conflict that tore them apart. But I knew very little, obviously, about Serbia and Croatia and the war and the history. So a lot of it was research and study. We had a professor from Columbia University come in and basically give us like a long class on what happened. I did a lot of reading, but you want to make sure you get it right, because there's people in that part of the world that lived through it. I mean, this war was only, I don't know, 25 years ago. So I felt I had to not pick sides, obviously, but to be factually as correct as I could be. But I think ultimately that piece was successful because it wasn't really about basketball or about war. It was about something anyone can tap into, and that's friendships and often breakups of friendships. I mean, we've all had situations with friends or family, estranged, something happened and something wasn't said. People never made up. Time went by and, you know, there's that emptiness or there's that regret, and so this was a story very much about that. So, you know, I wanted that to be at the core, beyond the basketball, beyond all that other stuff. And so ultimately it was just a story of two friends who grew up together who were torn apart by something that was beyond their control, and then they were apart and didn't talk, and then one ultimately passes away. And so there's the whole idea of regret and not ever being able to reconcile. So I think people can identify with that, and I think that's why the film was well received and was something that not just sports fans were pulled into. And I still get emails. I mean, that film was finished 6 years ago. I still get emails from people every week. I get a lot of emails from people in Europe, from that part of the country, that say, hey, that find me on Facebook or on LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever, and say, hey, this was a powerful, I remember that time, I remember those guys. Professors show it, history professors show that film to kind of explain, to have kids kind of get into history and what happened over there. So I was really happy with how it all, you know, came together.
From day one when you turned a camera on,
yeah,
to the day it was completed,
yeah,
how much approximate time?
It was about, I would say, from the time I very started like outlining the story to the time it was delivered, it was about right about a year, well, maybe 11 months.
Okay. And did you feel like you were rushed?
You always feel like you're rushed. I mean, you need deadlines, because filmmakers are, you know, any artist probably feels like they could just keep working on it and working on it. You talk to any screenwriter, they'll keep tweaking it. So, it's good to have a deadline. Now, I've worked on projects where the deadline was way tighter than I would have liked, because when you're crafting a film or story or a piece, you want to have that time to let it marinate. So say you finish the first cut of it, it's nice to have a few days or a week to just let it sit. And then you go back and watch it after stepping away and you realize, oh, wow, that's really not too clear, or that repeats itself a lot. It gives you perspective. When you're completely rushed to hit a deadline, you're just getting it out, and then it goes on the air, and you keep your fingers crossed, but you're going to watch and be like, oh, man, you know, that was a little rough there. So that you want that middle ground where you have enough time to let yourself work through what's working and what's not working. Show some other people to get their input. But you still want that deadline, so you know you have to deliver it to someone and get it done and get your money that you're owed for doing it, you know. Because if you don't, creative people most, I think, feel like they could keep working, and that's not a healthy thing.
So 11, 12 months or so on that project. Now you're heading up The Drive, documentary series on the Pac-12 Network. It's in its fourth year. We've done a variety of different elements from two teams year one, Cal and ASU. Cal goes 1-11. ASU wins the Pac-12 South. Year two is the UCLA Bruins. They're up for the title all the way up until, I think, the final week of the season. Then you look at last year, and it's Utah. They're a top five team in the country at one point, an Oregon State complete rebuild, to this year, where it's every team in the Pac-12 conference being featured. I'm curious, not only what would you rather when you look at a variety of those types of storytelling, but how do you process? Because now it's not 11 months. It's not even 11 days. You know, you've got to turn a story, get it around, get it on air, and you're seeing it from a variety of different points of view.
Yes.
Like one as an executive,
right?
And you're in the weeds creatively.
Yeah, it's been this season. I mean, the show's obviously a challenging show in that we have to turn it around quickly, and we don't have we don't have a huge budget or a huge crew that maybe some of the other networks are using. But I don't like to use that excuse. I still want to put The Drive up against any of those other shows, regardless of the resources, and have it stand up. And you know, I feel it does, and I'm proud of that. But it's challenging. And this year, doing 12 different schools, basically in 13 weeks. I think we had 1 week off in there. It was difficult because you are at one time you're prepping to shoot the upcoming school, you're shooting the current school, and you're editing a show that's about to air. So there's literally three projects at different stages happening at the same time. And each school, you have to be on point with each of them all at the same time. You can't say, oh, we're finishing the Oregon State show, so I'm not going to worry about Utah. No, you have to give each school their due, and they're going to expect that. So it's been difficult to focus on the show that you're working on, but still be two steps ahead with what's coming up and not give short shrift to any one of them.
So how do you creatively, creatives, right? We're kind of, we can be all over the place, but you can also be totally locked in. Like you must have to be extremely disciplined.
That's been the biggest learning curve for me. Cause I like to go down a rabbit hole. I like to be like with One's Brother. I basically, that was one project and I lived, breathed and ate that project for 11 months with really nothing else to worry about. And I mean, I loved it, but now in the position I am now, I mean, you have The Drive, which, like we said, has three different episodes going on at the same time. You have features, you have other shows that we're doing at the network. So, it's challenging. I've had to learn how to delegate more and to trust other people more, and at the same time learn when I should step in and take the reins on certain aspects of it. It's been freeing. I mean, when you work with good, talented people, you know, it actually makes for a better product. Sometimes when you do every single part of it, it's not the best for the end product. If you can find other people that you respect and trust and let them kind of run with it, whether it's an editor or a shooter, oftentimes it's better than what you could have done yourself. So I've learned to delegate and trust other folks, but still always keeping an eye on the product on each step of the way and giving notes. And that's just the way I am.
You know, one of the coolest things from my point of view when I get to watch these rough cuts is that it's not just a love story, right? It's not just the great student athlete who's doing amazing things. I mean, they're all over this conference, all over this country. But you dive into the story, whether it's a struggle, whether it's grief, whether it's good, bad, positive, indifferent. But there's a literal, as you referenced, there's a three-act structure.
Right.
How hard is that for you to blend all those together? I mean, you just referenced three shows at the same time.
Right.
And not necessarily how hard is it, but how do you do it? Because I think there's a lot of people listening that have side projects, right? But they're in a financial job, or they have a job that has to pay their bills or whatever, but they have this thing they do at night and they want to get creative, from a podcast to a short. Right. And here you are doing it on three films every day of the week.
Right. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have my main job be producing content and telling stories. It is hard that I have to multitask those things. So like I said, sometimes you need help. For people that are kind of have a day job and then are doing stuff on the side, you have to really want it and you have to prioritize it, because we're all busy. So instead of, you know, after work and eating dinner, instead of watching TV or, you know, going out, you have to dedicate yourself to a regimen, almost like punching the clock. Like, I'm going to work from 8:30 to 11:30 at night, you know, 5 days a week or 3 days a week, to writing this screenplay or making this short film or editing my son's high school football year in review video that I shot. You know, it's a lot of work. So you got to love it. You got to want it. But if you commit to that, you can get it done, and you'll have people that are psyched to see it. So,
you know, some of the coolest compliments I hear around the Pac-12 footprint and even other executives around the country is the look of the drive. They all say the same thing. There's just this look. You can tell when that series is on. I'm curious, for an East Coast guy who's worked in a variety of different places, your own production company, you talked about working at NBA TV early on, coming out here to the Pac-12 and the West Coast, what has been the thing that surprised you most about the storytelling side of your job within this documentary series?
Well, I mean, I've obviously learned that there's great talented filmmakers out here, as there was in the East Coast. I mean, back East, you obviously find people you like to work with, and then you just want to work with them. You don't want to. But coming out here, I've been forced to like open up my Rolodex, if you will, and work with new people, new camera people, and editors, and all the folks that you need to make something great. And, you know, just like the guys we're in the fourth year of the drive, we have had a few different crews working on it, and they've all been extremely talented and hardworking. The guys we're working with now, Taylor Cavanaugh and Matt Wilcox, a couple of young guys that are just starting out with their company. They're super hungry, very talented, and they've like rejuvenated me just seeing how hard they work and how high of a standard that they hold themselves to. So when you have guys like that, I don't have to really worry that they're gonna, you know, even if I'm not there on site, I know those guys aren't gonna just we don't need to get that interview or we don't need to get that shot. They're really driven. So I think the big lesson there is you have to be open to new things and new people. They're not all gonna work out, but you have to, you know, do your homework, look at people's reels, talk to them and get a sense, and then you'll find out that there's a lot of talented people out there who can do great, great stuff. And it's fun.
That's awesome, man. All right, I'll get you out of here.
You included, yo.
Thanks. Last couple questions.
Yeah.
Get a chance to talk to a lot of storytellers. You watch a lot of different stories.
Yeah.
I'm curious, in the art of storytelling, what makes you feel most alive when you're in it?
To be honest, for me, I think maybe because I started as an editor, what makes me feel most alive is when, you know, I've gone out, I've done the interviews, I've shot all the footage, been through all the stressful parts of locations and dealing with other people's schedules and having things go wrong. I like going through that, because if you don't go through the hard, then the payoff isn't as good. But to me, it's when you're in the edit room and you press play on the cut that you've been working on for days or weeks or whatever, and you watch it, and it just works, right? You get lost in it, and you feel your lump in your throat, or you laugh, or you're gripped by what happened, and it's just when when it all just came together with what you thought of in your head when the very first idea popped in, to that point where it actually is laid before you and it has an impact, that's the gold right there. You know, it doesn't always happen, or it doesn't happen to the extent that you had hoped, but sometimes it does. And sometimes you're completely alone in a dark room at 3 a.m. and there's no one there else to watch it. But, you know, you know when it's working. So,
well, you referenced your dad.
Yeah.
Curious what his reaction was to the first piece that he saw you put together.
Oh, let's see. For my dad. Well, my dad passed away. He passed away in 95. So a lot of probably my best stuff came after he passed away. Now, I'm sure he saw it. That's probably been pretty cool, although I don't know what his reaction was. But some of the early stuff I did, you know, he was a very practical guy. He grew up in the Depression, and he had to sacrifice a lot of his own dreams to fight in World War II and take care of his family. He didn't get to go to college and things like that. So I think knowing that he worked hard to allow me to do that stuff, I think he's probably super excited and happy and proud of me and proud of what he was able to do, and it paid off. But for a few of those pieces, first pieces I did at the NBA, where I had to go out and travel and shoot and do the interviews, and he was thrilled. He would tell me, but even more so, I'd hear that he would tell, you know, all his buddies or people at church or, you know, at work, like, make sure you watch Inside Stuff. My son did that piece on Larry Johnson, or my son did that piece on Larry Bird, or whatever. So, he was very supportive, and I'm very thankful for everything he, you know, allowed me to have that chance to do, which he didn't in his life. So,
that's awesome. And the last question, I ask everybody this, Mike, what do you feel about the word limits when you hear that?
The word limits? I don't really let that play into my life at all, really. I haven't really. I mean, I'm realistic to know that there are obstacles, and that there's often the things you want the most are the hardest to get. So I don't think people should just not be realistic to the fact that, you know, you hear a lot nowadays where people that have been successful, right, actors or filmmakers, say, oh, pursue your dreams and chase your dreams. If you really want it, you get it. Like, I think that's true, but I think you have to take that a little bit with a grain of salt. I mean, those people made it. It paid off. There's a lot of people that pursued their dreams and didn't get there, so it's not easy. But I think if you're realistic about yourself and what your talents are or what your potential is, and your drive is strong enough to go through all the hard parts to get there, then I think you can get there. But I think you have to be realistic also, and be realistic about what you're going to have to sacrifice to get there. Because for most of the time, you're going to have to give up a lot of cool stuff, fun stuff. I mean, I know I have friends that they've had to forego maybe, you know, families and kids and stuff to get to the point where they want in their careers. Some have and some haven't. So, you know, I think you just have to be realistic about your abilities, be realistic about what it's going to take to get there. And if that's the case, then you shouldn't let what other people tell you can't do or limits get in the way.
That's awesome, man. So, I appreciate it, man. That was a lot of fun.
No problem, Yoke.
You got a storyteller, anytime. Director, all of the above, Mike. Congratulations on everything. Thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks, Yogi. Appreciate it. Watch The Drive on Pac-12 Networks, and watch Yogi do his thing.
All right, bro. Later.